where my gifts always come late. So,
well, it sucks to suck. Yeah. You know, I'm sorry so that you live in the distant land of.
I live Jersey. In the easiest place to get stuffed.
Right. Literally. There's probably easiest. A distribution center like under your house. Like,
I'm still mad that I gave Jay Ray's fucking.
Yeah, you blew it. You blew it. We weren't even
address. Seriously, dude.
A gift.
Yeah.
Oh,
Andreas, if didn't you're going to curse within the first minute, it, do it though? In your native tongue of German.
Didn't he manage to like go find his old neighbors or whatever? And
well, he figured out it went to the neighbors. I don't know if he ever got it back.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. All I know is I was really hyped about that present because it was actually something
one of us who never has a fixed address. It changes every year. So
I've had the same address the whole time. Can you guys stop moving? Like,
yeah,
what you got again? Well, it's just one. Well, no, it's actually him too.
I was gonna say, like, it's funny that you guys are talking about this because I moved like 3 or 4 times and I've never had a problem. So maybe
there was his own fault going on. He had, you know, it was his own fault. He hadn't put an address. I wrote him through the system. Can you please put an address? And then he puts that old address.
Ah,
yeah.
That's just silly. Yeah.
He said he's going to come on next week to talk about Aaron's win this, so we can take the chance to yell at him. Like, make sure your address is right this time.
Yes.
Oh, boy. That's so great. Let's have a special guest on so we can yell at him.
I know. Isn't it Everybody great?
Everybody rubs their hands together.
Isn't like, that special
guest? Right? We don't yell at each other enough, so.
I was going to say, that's barely a guest. It's like a... That's just the cousin you have in the other room that decided to wander.
He's Mangleman, like us. He's a part of us, so it's like we can yell at him all the time.
Sure.
Yeah.
We yelled at him enough that he redressed it and actually liked it.
I know, right? It only took like 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, though, is there a single person that you made that recommendation to that has ever regretted it? Because I
cannot get my roommate past the first couple of books. He doesn't like the audiobooks and he won't read them physically.
I define couple. Like, did he make it through Proven Guilty? Or
I think he gets
why
stuck.
Why do I keep doing that? Grave Peril. Really?
Grave Peril. Yeah, he gets stuck.
There. Yeah. My brain. Just okay. I'm just gonna insert whatever.
We could do the thing of starting him at Deadbeat. And
we could do the thing.
I have suggested that several times because at book 7. Written as an alternate entry point. Try that one. See if you like it, and then you could start from the start if you want to.
If you don't like it, there's something wrong with you. I'm just going to go out there and say.
Yeah, I'm not saying.
Yeah, roommate who's not even listening to us right
he,
now.
He says no. I want to read the whole thing if I'm going to read it from start to end, not from. Book
okay,
seven.
Then just.
I mean, I respect power it. Through it. Stop, yeah, stop it, sucking.
He's too busy reading.
Tell him there's a brothel in it, and if that doesn't get him on board, then you know.
There's a brothel. In the
I mean,
first
you don't need
too.
To. Maybe, you don't need to know that the brothel doesn't actually even appear on screen. Yeah. That it's totally background. No,
maybe if it was taking place like in a lit RPG, because that's all he reads these days.
You are missing out on a very clear option here. Read the book to him as a bedtime story. If he wants the audiobook and he doesn't want to read it, you have the physical copies.
Yeah. No, he has to thirst free on audio, but he says James is a shit narrator.
Okay.
And so really though, I feel like we've skipped to the final option, which is get a new roommate, because I don't like this guy anymore.
Like, this has popped up once
I was
twice
skeptical.
On the subreddit recently,
I just thought
I think
that they were a bad person, but now I want to fight them. And you know, like, I mean, now we've got a problem.
He says he's
not the highest of quality as the later ones, but like, he's still a great narrator.
He's a little boring, but the real sin for him is every character sounds the same.
No, they don't.
And right. That's what I say. No,
Karen
they don't.
Murphy and Harry Dresden are famously the exact same person. So
Marcone has his own voice, and
I was
going to
say
easily
Murphy
tell
is
him
clearly
apart
the
from
more
Dresden.
Masculine
just
of
come
the
on.
Two.
I don't know if any of you have ever heard an audiobook from a narrator called Nick Podell, who I also think is very good, but that's like his favorite. And maybe, to be fair, Nick Podell does very exaggerated different voices compared to James. James.
Okay, so your roommate is just used to hearing cartoonish differences in people.
I don't want to Nick is very good. I don't want to shit talk Nick. It's not cartoonish. It's just it's very distinct, whereas James is more, you know, he acts, I would say. I can tell the difference because, well, he changes the tone a little, right? But they speak differently. The intonations are different. Stuff like that. Like, so I can see what he, I can see what he means, kind of, with that they sound samey, if he doesn't pay attention to the actual acting, which I feel like James is very, very good at. I don't know. I think James is good. I can tell the difference between every character. The only ones who ever sound samey is Harry and Thomas.
You got eyeballs, you can read.
I listened to the entire trilogy of not very good vampire books because Marsters narrated them.
Like, they were okay. You need to reread those. No, I still think about them sometimes. They're not that bad.
I mean, I think about them too as a bad example. You know,
no, like, they're not that bad. I mean, maybe the world building just got me, but I remember them being quite entertaining. And
just like, because you remember enjoying them doesn't mean they're good.
On a scale of airships, where we've got, you know, maybe this book series at one end, and we've got maybe the Aeronauts Windlass on the other. Being pretty much the two books with airships that I've read, like, you know.
So is this vampire book down there with Nona the Ninth and all that crap?
Oh, it's not that bad, but it's like, it's so tropey. I think,
I was gonna say, the director was really quick to be like, well, just because you like it doesn't mean it's not good, and I was waiting for this.
Nona was great. It was different, obviously. It's weird.
It's wildly different.
Oh, Nona is better than the second one that I forget the title.
Shut your fucking mouth.
It has redeeming qualities and everything like that, right? But it is just it's a traumatic experience to read. Like, it's okay your characters go through trauma. I shouldn't have to go through trauma that isn't like vicariously lived through the characters. I think
it's a testament to how good the world building is that I want to read the next book, because
that's fair.
Like, the plotting is decent, the world building is exceptional. I really don't like the characters all that much. I'm not invested.
Yeah. You got to play more things or read more things where everybody's a bunch of bastards, because that's just, you know, how it goes these days, apparently.
If, gotta read some, especially, if you want good characters, then it's Joe Abercrombie, dude. You want that's character.
Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's especially the Europeans, apparently. They just start with the de facto, everybody's a bunch of bastards, and then they just go from there. Like,
well, they've had like 2,000 years of experience with that being the case, so.
Right. So anyway,
So let's do this writing room thing. Dresden, stick on Dresden, and we're writing the script, I guess, of storyboard of how we're doing the
storyboard.
Let's be modest. HBO.
We're throwing somebody else's shit at the wall and seeing if it sticks. So.
Well, if you guys would play Powerball and Mega a little more, we might have all the millions and millions. But you don't.
That's your job.
True. Yeah.
Why is that my job? It wins in every state except mine, apparently.
It also accepts, you know, because we literally don't sell it here because Mormons.
Yeah, but that doesn't count. You.
It was California this last time, man. Freaking all the way $2 billion. And
it was probably Ben, which is why he's never going to show up again.
Right. It was like California. I was like, shit, should I go buy my tickets in California? That's a little bit more of a drive, but, you know.
Because then it's Florida that wins. It's California or Florida, like, every time.
Right. Yeah.
Makes no sense.
Gotta imagine its population, probably. So
I mean the population in New York is quite large, and still
that's
nobody
fair.
Ever wins.
Yeah.
Or at least I don't care if anybody I need to win. It really has nothing to do with it's not like I take civic pride in a New Yorker winning. It has to be the right New Yorker winning.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't even personally have to win, but if any of my cool friends or family want to win and give me some of that too, I'd be happy. So
yeah, I'd give you guys like a million each.
Ooh,
depending.
Did I mention you're my favorite ketchup eater today? So
pretty much.
I gotta get obscure enough that, you know, like,
people who actually weren't watching at the time don't know what we're talking about for once.
Well, that too. I mean, that's the whole point. Okay, so storyboard. There are adjustments.
Adjustments right. going. We've got like one episode kind of written out, and then we realize that we did some things out of order. But I don't think it's fine.
Well, because one of the other things, like if we're going chronologically, one of the other things that we missed was we didn't get Tutu in episode one. So maybe that, like we talked about having a climax at the end of one, it would have been great if it was Bianca's, but that might be too big and it might be too late. So, you know, I guess maybe it could be Morgan or something like that. Cause I was just looking, because what we had roughly the first time was, you know, Dresden's at the murder, Dresden's at his office, which those are technically flipped from what's in the book. So, you know, those could go either way, in my opinion. Like, I think I'd be fine having the intro be the intro. So all of the fans go like, they're doing it right, you know, or whatever. But we also talked about you want the shock and awe in the first 5 minutes because you want people to know how real it is. That was, you know, even me espousing that. You deal
there's
with the murder
be
investigation.
Tits, there's going to be gore. There's going to be cussing and right. cheesiness. You got to get all of those all at once.
Right. Picked up by Marcone, big deal. Setting up with Monica Sells, a big deal, because then we can let that simmer, you know, for an episode or two if it needs to. Then Toot Toot, I'm sliding in there somewhere because that's where it happens chronologically, but we might move that as we'll discuss in a minute. But
if I remember it right, so when he's investigating the cells and he goes to their mm-hmm. lake house, he doesn't find much. And then he asks Toot Toot and I figure like were people around here. And that's when he gets the introduction, like with pizza and how much Toot cares about pizza. So you had pizza and you didn't share. Right. And then we introduce Morgan. So like that seems to me like it could be episode two ending. If you
it's like Morgan unsheathing his sword, saying he's going to kill him. And then.
Yeah, exactly.
I right. like the little detail there where it's like, okay, milk, honey, bread. And then it's like, they talk about pizza. Like, you have pizza? And I was like, I like how it's like, well, of course, if you like these things, he probably really likes pizza.
Sure. Yeah. And that's where, like, I think episode two, especially from what we were talking about, is going to get more out of order chronologically. And we were talking about that a little bit in the pre-show and even before you two joined, I think, where, like, I having end with Bianca, like having it bookended by the murder investigation and then end with Bianca, at least the opening bits of her trying to lunge at him and him blasting her with the, you know, with the handkerchief or whatever would be great, but also out of order. Like, so we're missing Toot Toot and then we're missing Bob and Harry making potions, which I'll be honest, like for a TV show and whatever, my first inclination was to cut it, but
I think the potions because it gets cut in the hoops too. Yes,
no,
it is important to the foreshadowing of what happens with Harry and Susan later. And yeah, it's
and for Full Moon, because like if you're gonna merge Stormfront and Full Moon into one season, the introduction of potions and the use all throughout that season is gonna be important. So you need to describe the potions and how they work, and also the foreshadowing of the Susan and the Toad Demon and all things like that.
We can't fit it in another way? Because like what happened, like the plot device, because I'm not sure. I'm asking the writer. The reason why I ask is because it gets cut from the
producer,
book.
As you
Jim,
see.
We've got a question about Full or Stormfront. You know, like
Jim cuts it later, so yeah. I think it's a good. No. Could be an
he took it out partly. I think he said because they were kind of becoming too powerful or too much of a gimmick. And
it was
wanted to
the
up
problem
the
was
tools.
Taking a break in the middle of the story for him to go brew potions because they're usually very hectic.
But he also talks about constantly you need a scene in a sequel. So you have a scene, the big shiny thing of Bianca almost rips his face off, and then he needs to go back home and get more information, realize he needs help.
Right.
So he talks to Bob. Bob is the Portageek skull. And that's like, here's all the things that you don't know, you fucking idiot, and make some potions. And a love potion because Bob's horny.
I think tying it closer in with the investigation and actually showing this is part of the work that Dresden's putting in, I think that's got merit. Like I do think that we're gonna squish some scenes together, but I think that cutting it entirely is a mistake.
Well, the easy way is have
I agreed with you initially. I just wanna to clarify, like because the other thought that I'm thinking and where I've got the book and I want to go through it in more detail, probably not on the air still, but like, is there an opportunity to squish the potion making scene together with Susan showing up unannounced together with the Toad Demon directly? And I know that those have space between them, But is that possibility? Because if you cut the potion making scene out as a card, it can go a lot of places. It doesn't have to be right here. And I think it can still be important, you know.
You can make it a loose thing where he's like already got some stuff brewing like in the background, right? So then he's checking on it as he's having his first conversation with Bob. He's asking about some ancillary stuff with that, as well as the rest of it. He's not even doing the horny potion yet, because that'll be the main thing where it gets your attention on the potions, but they won't necessarily be the focus. They'll just kind of be in the background and you get tidbits as it goes along.
Sure. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely, it could be a visual thing, but the important part is him discussing with Bob and then getting those two particular potions, because they need to be foreshadowed in some way. Otherwise, it's not going to make sense during the Toad Demon scene.
So, you know, just a couple of things that we need to balance of, like, we first meet Susan in the books when she bamboozles Dresden when he's at Max. He's at the bar. Correct.
Right.
And what I don't want to lose is the introduction of Mac, because we know he's important and he just needs to be there in the background. He doesn't, like, how early do you put him there? I'm not sure. Right. And like, so otherwise when he's at Mac, he's only like kind of talking at Mac, and he's talking way more than he ever should. Mac himself, at least. And then he calls Dresden an idiot and Susan walks away and he has a steak sandwich. I don't think there was anything more there that was important. So rearranging those bits are fine.
Right.
But the Toad Demon was sent by Victor Sells after Victor already knew that Dresden was involved in the investigation. And so how much does Victor Sells know before he sends the Toad Demon to Dresden? And you need to line that up before you can mash all those things together.
I think there's enough wiggle room in there that as long as we've done the toot toot stuff first, then Victor could know that Dresden went to his old house. And obviously, like, he would, doesn't he know some way because Monica's involved, basically? And so, like, there are enough threads there that I think, even if you don't know the story, you can kind of put together,
audience the doesn't need to things. Know all of this yet, but you need to still understand in the background what's not being shown, what Harry doesn't know, that all needs to line up. And you could use the Toad Demon and then Morgan showing up again. It's like, see, you're calling down demons, I'm going to cut your head off. You can use that as the ending of an episode as well. But that means maybe move Morgan, I'm going to cut your head off, in the beginning of an episode, and then Justin figuring out what the fuck is going on, and then a Toad Demon attack.
Right. Which, yeah, I was thinking, like, you know, yeah. The problem with starting, like, episode two with that would be, like, how does he get from Bianca's to the lake house, and how do you make all that make sense? But
I feel like a good episode cutoff could also be... being forced into the car with Marconi, then have the conversation open the next episode.
If we're trying to do four episodes for the book, there's a lot of scenes to cut to get in there, and so there's going to be cuts. And you know, I want it to be word for word, but you know, now we're the other shoe is on the other foot, and we've got to make those hard decisions. That's part of the point of this.
Like Mac, like Morgan, you have to let Marcone be his own foreshadowing, because he's going to try to get pay Dresden to go away. And then in Full Moon, he's trying to pay Dresden to be on his side. And so that comes back. And if you're smashing this into one season, then you need to give him the introduction.
Right.
And I would say still put it in the same plot of, like, now he doesn't have the money from Marcone because he just pissed him off. And he really, really needs to take Monica Sells' money and job. And he could go from Bianca of just getting his face nearly bitten off and like, well, I still need to make money, so I might as well drive over to that lake house. And just like, because that's the way the plot lines have to juggle anyway. It's exactly what he did in the book. He just changed his mind what he was doing at every point.
Right. Well, but truthfully, he went to the lake house first, I think. And then he's like, well, that was a dead end. Let me go talk to Bianca. And that's where rearranging, you know. Well, yeah, but it's like you just almost got eaten. Well, that was a bust. Let me go to the lake house. That's a letdown. That's the wrong direction to build the tension, I think, you know.
Another thing we could consider cutting, and I'm not saying this just because of who she is, but if you make the Murphy scenes, a lot of them anyway, not the face-to-face stuff, but more like she's trying to call him and trying to get information about this. And then that allows you to have the antagonistic side building, because he's basically only having these quick snippets with her over the phone.
Call him on what?
He's got a phone.
He's got an office phone.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she calls him at home all the time.
Or that he barely can, that he can barely get a connection through half the time. Like, yeah, but you know,
at least in the early book, okay, so again,
that's more of the problem then. So she's
he
getting
has a phone at home where he does all his wizard
conversations out of him, these little snippet, and then so you basically don't see her even for two episodes until that whole amulet thing, and then
yeah. She's got to be at the murder investigation. There's no chance.
No, I'm saying like, after the initial thing, you've got this thing where she's kind of you may almost forget about her for a minute there, sure, because she's right. You're just having these quick things and that compresses
and I'm okay with that in general. And I think more and more is going to wind up that way, right? Because we talked about that, like you almost, I mean, you have to do it with Marcone in a sense, right? You introduce Marcone, he doesn't even show up until almost the end. Like I think there's the other little thing, like it's, what is it, the varsity, because there's two of them, right, where Harry all but burns down the place or whatever, and then that gives Marcone the idea that I'm just gonna have breakaway doors because this is apparently Dresden's, you know, thing.
Yeah,
so I think it'd be fun to have that in there and to have that little callback later. Morgan is almost the same way, where it's like he shows up here and then he just doesn't show up again pretty much until Deadbeat, right? I mean, I guess you see him in Summer Night. But yeah, like he just fucks off, you know? And so
he's got another job like, to do.
Right. You know, so there's a lot of these little characters where it's like, yeah, you're going to like introduce them, but then they're just going to be on ice for a couple episodes. And I think in some cases that makes sense, but I think in other cases, like it may be, they need to be even more background or just cut them, you know, or whatever.
Well, but so I think I love the idea actually of having Murphy like a constant, like she shows up in every episode, but maybe it is only a phone call and maybe it is only her pressuring him of like, I need answers. This is bad. Marcone's doing weird shit. This is bad. Of just, yeah, building the antagonistic thing to make it make more sense in Full Moon when she chipped his tooth.
Right. And in, you know, Full Moon where, you know, obviously we're going to the precinct. And, you know, in Grave Peril, where, you know, she's going to be on ice for most of the episode, but still kind of a big deal, especially because you got to try and land enough of the emotions early so that the flop in Summer Night makes sense, where she starts to come around and she starts to trust him. And, you know, you could chalk it up to a big old misunderstanding or something like that. Like, on the one end, I like the fact that, you know, to lean into Karen being semi-antagonistic, right? But now you've set yourself up a problem for, you know, two books down the line of making that flop. And now she's an ally again, which, you know, she was the whole time anyway, but kind of suspicious, you know, maybe play up more of what's his name? Her partner.
Carmichael.
Yeah. Carmichael being in her ear all the time about like Charlotte and this, and he's a faker and whatever. And you see her start to buy into that. And then when Carmichael's out of the picture,
yeah, he doesn't trust him.
Yeah. But he likes him.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I remember anyway. Maybe I'm wrong.
Sure which of us hasn't read the books anymore, because you guys are like coming out with like the weirdest shit.
I feel like Carmichael likes Preston, but he doesn't believe the magic shit. But he actually,
I think,
like,
for as much as out of commission she's going to be in grave peril, what he does with Mickey Malone and then with her will help that Summer Night stuff easier, even though she's not as much of a presence.
Yeah, play it up where we can at least get, you know, in Summer Night, get her to a neutral point before the chlorophene attack, which, you know, then that's going to push her over the edge and be like, oh yeah, shit, you really are a good guy. You're an idiot, because who tries to fight people with, you know, marbles, but yes, you know, but you're a good
marbles
guy,
all over
you
the
know?
Floor.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. And the good news is here, we only need our audience to be as smart as Harry Dresden, which isn't a very high bar to hit. So, you know, if we can have all the other characters fill in some of those gaps, then we're good.
Okay. Yeah, combining Stormfront and Full Moon, like, I think still probably more like 10 to 12 episodes just because at this point, like, we're talking about, like, how much are you cutting to get one and two episodes? Like, I think you might need more breathing room to get it to flow right. But they do flow into each other very nicely with, like, how, like, if you extend Morgan throughout both of the books and you extend Marcone and Bill Murphy, right, it's like, this is working out fairly well, actually.
Right. So a concern around that, and one of the things I've been thinking as well, is that if we're doing these as a season, then these books have a year between them every time. And so if you go from episode 4 or episode 6 into episode 5 or episode 7, time needs to have passed. In some cases, that's actually really important. If you want to try and cut that out for Stormfront to Full Moon, I don't see a huge problem with that in general. But if you want to cut that out going from, like, Deadbeat to Proven Guilty, or,
well, even Grave Peril to Summer Night, because, you know, there's like a year without Susan. He's right. Been hunkered down trying to find exactly.
Well, Grave Peril takes here. Place in October, so, because they're thinking it's a spooky season issue, and then Summer Night happens in the solstice. So yeah. that's at least half a year, more or less. But I think Stormfront to Full Moon is kind of, it's coldish, so it's fall. But it was like, what, like summer to fall, I guess. Like, wasn't that
could
bad.
Be. And so, like, yeah, like I said, that works once and maybe a couple other places, but a much bigger problem is going to be those year-long transitions where that actually is kind of necessary and makes sense to the story. So should we try and break those be the seasons, or, you know, something else? Because, I mean, you run into that. I mean, a lot of my experience is Star Trek, right? So you run into instances where they do differences where it's like, sometimes it's an immediate transition from, you know, like you have your finale and then they're literally in the same story when the season premiere comes out. That's a shitty move, by the way. Don't do a 3-month break before you get to resolve your story. But, you know, like, you can have that, obviously, but there's also times where it's like, yep, we just done something else for a year while you weren't watching. You know, and so it made me think, like, you know, do these turn into more like BBC style seasons where it's like 4 hour-and-a-half long episodes, you know, like what they did with Sherlock or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe. I mean, if we have infinite money and something like that.
Well, the other, I think, quote unquote, easy way to do it is you make a clear mid-season finale type thing. So the whole end of Susan and she's leaving, I think it's very easy. And then the second half of that season in Summer Night, especially through visual storytelling, you see the male piling up, you see him unshaven, you see him not in a good state, you know, like, there's easy way. And then you have the conversation with Will about how much time it's been. There are ways to do this where the passage of time is still important, but it's not as, you know, it's not like as jarring necessarily that it's just come out of nowhere.
Mid-season, like, fight and stuff like, isn't that for, you know, not so much these longer episodes, shorter season shows? That's more for the 30 to 1 to 45 minute shows that has 24 episodes.
There not anymore. Really, like, this... It depends. Yeah, because, like, I mean, you could look at Discovery. Star Trek Discovery is another one where it's like, I think they went like 10 episodes and then had like a mid-season break. And I think, I mean, that one's almost a special case because I think it's gone on for like a year and a half plus, you know, the writer's strike and whatever. But, you know, then they're going to come back and have like a handful of episodes and then be done. So, like, it is more malleable than it used to be, right? You know, you used to have like your mid-season break was like a month, and then you did like, you know, the next 10 or 13 episodes or whatever, because a season used to be 26 episodes and whatnot. But yeah, it seems like, you know, the industry is much better off with, you know, the shorter seasons and getting longer things episodes. Through that, you know.
Yeah. So even if this was like, whether this was a weekly thing or if this was like Netflix did with Arcane and you staggered it out, so it was like the first 5 episodes were released as the book and then you have your little finale thing, and then as a week goes by and then the next 5 are coming out. Right. It's not really about it being a finale in the sense that there's this big passage of time. It's more like a finale in the story sense, like, here's a break, now here's where we're going.
Okay. And I was going to say, like, how much of that, like, I don't think hardly any of that is up to production, because it's like, how much does that extra week give them, really? But if it was a thing about story pacing, then that can make a kind of sense. But
yeah, no, that's more about making it is more about the I guess marketing, for lack of a better word, but like when, you know, when you break it up like that, it's like, so now you have your conversation piece to build some hype and then it's coming, but you know, that's what the streaming would do it for more now. Some of them, obviously they still just dump it out, but it depends on the studios, I guess.
Right.
You know, obviously the weekly thing is one way to do it too. If it's, if we're talking your traditional Showtime HBO, it would be every week anyway. So that's, again, easy.
Something like Arcane, I think, would work best with something like Justin, because we need a bit of buy-in, but I also want to build the hype around it. So dumping a few episodes and everyone binges it and then is waiting, and it kind of, you get a mix of both worlds, and I think that would do really well for Dresden.
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on obviously how many episodes slash books we're doing, but if it was 12 again, then it would be, you know, you could do like three episodes and then a week goes by, three episodes and a week goes by. So you got like a month and a half of this as a release thing.
I mean, I prefer the get the whole season, watch it when you want, but I think that works the best in general. But as the shorter seasons, longer episodes, and watch it when you want. What would be better in terms of commercial viability? I think personally, the way I think it works the best, especially if you want to hit big, is a weekly release, so people can talk about it during the week and get excited about it. Mm-hmm. That's not my preference, but that's probably the best in terms of getting the most out of your show.
Like, well, it's easier to do when you're 10 or 12 episodes than if this was like a 25 episode thing. But then again, those were every week too, and nobody really cared. So
it will depend. But in a lot of cases, those, they were being
they're half an hour
as they went, you know. Well, I'm just saying, like, it used to be your week to week was literally like they were taking that week to film it, you know, or whatever. They might be three or four episodes ahead. But, you know, in a lot of cases, you read about authors just, or like writers having to just like jam out scripts constantly to keep up with the weekly cadence and whatever. And like, if you want to talk old timey shows again, Star Trek, I have lots and lots of experience in history there. Like that was stuff that they did, and why like bottle episodes were important was to slow down, you know, the pacing for their production staff, for example. Like, it's like, you don't have to make sets this week, so you can go work on something else, you know, or whatever. But yeah, like these days, I think it's almost like you approach the season like a movie, right? Like, you know, look at Loki, for example, because it just wrapped up. You know, they probably filmed for several weeks and did everything pretty much all at once. I just read an article where they basically had to scrap like episode 5 and rewrite it in a weekend, which is amazing considering how episode 5 came out, in my opinion. But other than that, like, you're not just like, it's not like they were filming episode
this,
one.
This is of the new season, right? Because then
I
mean, I haven't watched it yet, so I don't know what you mean with episode 5, but.
Well, you should. So like, if you're interested in.
I'm very interested. And I love Marvel, and I don't want to admit this, but even the Marvel fatigue has hit me a little bit. So I'm actually a little behind on the shows. I've watched the movies except Marvel's.
Yeah.
And Guardians was great, but yeah.
Loki is fantastic, and you kind of have to, you should rewatch season 1 would be a good idea. You don't have to, I guess, but it'd be a good idea.
I remember it okay. Well, maybe I should. Do you need to watch Secret War before Loki, or is they no. they are they separate? Because I haven't watched that one either.
Unrelated. Yeah, unrelated. So,
can we go back to Justin now?
No.
It was 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It was 30 seconds.
No, it wasn't.
Marvel's going to impact what we're doing with Dresden. So you're going to have to get over it. Okay. You can.
Everything that Marvel did, we're going to do the exact opposite.
Well, how are you going to sit? So one thing that I've been stewing on the last week is, how are you going to sit there and cry about how quippy that Marvel is? And then you're going to be like, cool, let's do that with Dresden.
No, because Dresden is quippy by being an idiot. His quippiness shows how much of an idiot he is. Marvel is quippy to show of how much better I am than you. It's different. Okay. Execution is different.
Your heart. That's why Ebenezer said, if you touch him again, the only thing they're going to find left of you is your $500 pair of shoes.
Yeah, but it's not Dresden doing it.
Idiot he is. I am saying that the material is quippy because Jim Butcher is a comics book fan. and he's gonna write the same kind of humor.
We've gone all these years and glossed over that Ebenezer knows the quality of those shoes is right.
Very much undervaluing. Those are probably more like $1,500 shoes.
But those were Island Beach shoes that she might not have wore her most expensive ones.
They were like $1 million shoes, he's just thinking in $1,780. So when he says $500, he's thinking like America's GDP back then, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was just like, "What's the most expensive number I can think of? $500?" You know.
See, so you just made the argument that he's actually an idiot, and you've thus supported the director's point.
I think the argument there was that he's old. I don't think even if he was being an idiot, would I say, "Excuse me, sir, I think you're being an idiot," because I don't like being bent in half magically.
You know better.
So she knows better too. That's why she didn't touch him again. And come on, like that entire book. Like if there is a Marvel movie that is a Dresden book, it is fucking Turncoat. You know, like I'm going to kick your ass up between your ears. Oh yeah, that's just, you know, Injun Joe being an idiot. So
when did Turncoat come out?
It was like 2010, I think.
Yeah, 2009, something like that. 2010. Yeah.
So
I had to look it up because that's what
pre-Avengers still, but. You know, probably just Buffy.
Well, they're all. I mean, Changes was what, 2012? So that was. Sure.
Yeah.
And that's going to that's going to be a good like 10, 15 minutes at the end of the second to last Turncoat episode is going to be a good fight between them. That'll be a good.
That'd be end big of an CGI episode. Cost. Good
one. No, we could do partially practical. We're doing partially practical. I don't care what it costs.
I agree. Actually, like that would be
and it's not because CGI, the problem with CGI is the time crunch that these people are given and they can't do anything. But
you want practical the also does look that good. Realism of so, the T-Rex in Jurassic Park actually scaring the shit out of those
kids. A nice blend is, I think, a good, especially if you were going to do the series live action, I think that will be best because full CGI is just going to look shit. No matter how good we do it.
We're going to hire the T-Rex from Jurassic Park. I'm in for that.
So, what the fuck's he been doing all these years? She's been doing.
Yeah.
The Jim Henson production people, like Farscape, like all those crazy puppets and all those crazy things. Why?
I think you've gone the wrong way with the practical.
I was going to say we could make this Muppet series out of Dresden. That would be fine too.
No, but just like if you can have something like Shagnasty, then just
as
like
much
if
as
you
I don't
practical
like animation,
effects, you need something that's big like that.
I'm on board with the Muppets, like having Harry Dresden the Muppet, like.
And it's obviously got to be Gonzo, who is him,
right? Sure, I guess
Rizzo can be Bob. Yeah. This can happen. This will be our side project.
Does Gonzo have a girlfriend? Because who are we casting in that role? So,
well, it doesn't matter. They all die anyway. So we just got to find four female puppets that are going to get killed and or mind whammied.
Yeah. Never mind. I'm off this train. So it got too real for a second. So. I think it'd be great if we were going to do like a G-rated version or something, then, because then I'm like Muppets and Blood and Guts and stupid sexy Muppets, and I'm just like, nah.
Listen, if you can do an Angel episode where he's a puppet and do it funny, then you can do this.
Well, I think that's something else worth balancing too. Is like, do we go into some of the gimmicky episodes? Like, do we do a musical? Do we do a Muppet episode because it's funny? You know.
So. I mean, no, but
you're like, hold on, let me enjoy this. No,
we could do it if we combine those two into like a puppet musical. We could get away with that once.
Right, we got to one up it, right? Everybody else has done one or the other, but we
right. Do you do both
at the same
time. Well, actually, technically, Community did both at the same time because when they did the puppet episode, they were singing it a lot.
It sucked.
I liked the puppet episode. It wasn't a good season, but I liked the puppet episode.
It sucked. I hated it.
So,
okay, oy.
Harry Dresden, World Police. So.
No, not that kind of puppet. Like, it's got to be actual.
Back aboard. Let's do that.
Yeah. It's Harry Dresden, World Police. That's just full satire at that point.
Okay, I'm good with that.
I look, man, if we're gonna jump the shark, the hoop should be on fire. That's all I'm saying.
Like, yeah, he starts off every episode with a hat, but you can see it leaving his head through the string every time.
Oh yeah,
it starts and then it just goes on the rest of it without noticing why.
I'm out of material, but if we could have pushed this like three more jokes, she might have died. So it's a bummer.
We got
time. Like, can you fit in the vomiting scene? And he's just like outside of Max or something.
Duh. It's Blood Rights is the Muppet episode. So when he calls for the Bolshevik Muppet, Harry, the Bolshevik Muppet, shows up and blows up.
I was going to say that, yeah, because then the frozen turkey's coming down. That's great for a puppet angle. God.
Do you think we could get the rights for like a 3-second flash when he says the Bolshevik Muppet with all the dynamite, and then you just have Harry, like, you know?
Yes.
Like he thinks for a second. You have one of those like internal thoughts. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, we could. And if we can't, we'll take the lawsuit.
Right. We're big enough. We got enough money in our imaginary.
Well, like, obviously, you know? We care.
Yeah.
We're fully funded for all seasons.
We're
already.
And we're playing with
like we're Lord of the Rings. Anyway. We're Lord of the Rings, baby.
Right. Yeah. I gotta tell you, I think my pitch would be like, what if I could make this for less than $250 million an episode? I mean, pay me $250 million an episode, but it won't cost that much, you know, like.
So if it will cost them the same, that's not much of a pitch.
Sure it is. Yeah. I'm just, you know, I'm assuming they're not paying attention for some of this anyway. So,
oh, easily.
But yeah.
Like, yeah, that's going to be the problem is if this show takes off, is how much we can get away with before the studio wants to meddle. Mm. And then we're going to have to start fighting.
Yep.
Which is why I think we should film the first 3 seasons, ergo 6 books, like more or less do what the Lord of the Rings did in as much, you know, a year and a half, get it all nicely done.
Sure.
That way you've got 3 seasons of this, and then you can, one, start filming, so there's not a huge amount of aging gap, but obviously there will be some. There needs to be some. But then you also have enough ammo in your pocket to be like, you know, we're doing this our way.
We did this, and we didn't even use the zombie T-Rex yet. So,
well, if we did the first 3 seasons, we would.
You said
6. Oh, wait, that's right, 7. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and we didn't even have the, exactly.
So. Right.
That one needs to have.
And I mean, if the effects,
let's go get the T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
Right.
To do well, that. Yeah, because it's probably looking a little worn down now anyway. So,
skin's all falling off. We'll just staple some of that down.
It's just been sitting in Spielberg's garage this whole time.
Yeah.
I assume he is. He's allowed to have it, but I don't know for sure.
He's got that Triceratops mounted to his wall since they had to hunt it and kill it. So,
I
saw that meme. So, okay. So, episode 2.
We've gone beyond it.
Yeah.
We've gone to puppets.
So are we in episode 3 now? What is the ending of episode 2? Is it the toad demon?
Yeah.
Is it Morgan showing up right after the toad demon?
Toad demon's a lot to get into 2 episodes. I think that would have to be the episode 3.
You think okay, so?
So,
yeah.
Yes.
So what's the ending of episode 2? Where's this break?
I mean, I'm okay with leaving Morgan to the end of episode 2 in the sense that like it does kind of build that drama. Episode 3, he doesn't even need to be there. And then in episode 4, you see more, you know, you get like a scene of Morgan spitting out his coffee when he sees the thing about the toad demon and like that son of a bitch. And then he goes to hunt down Dresden and then he doesn't show up again till the climax or something, you know. That's obviously spitballing. I think this should be from Dresden's perspective mostly still, but
yeah, it's either episode 2 ends with him making the threat and then you've got like 2 minutes of them at the beginning of episode 3, but then you're not really seeing him again until whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or you wrap that all up and like he just gets out of the encounter with Morgan at the end there, and then episode 3 would I suppose mostly be build up towards and then the toad demon and then the aftermath of that and all that stuff.
Well,
Harry still has to do the gumshoe investigation at various points. Like there's the
right.
I forgot all their names. The couple with the dead kid and the driver that
the Bacots?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
that's another thing we may have to
gotta talk to trim. The sister.
So. Well,
Yes, she comes up and is important. Well, the other thing is we could make that a, there are certain cases we or people we could make as like stuff to sprinkle throughout until they become important. Like the Beckett stuff could be over the course of several stories.
Right.
Yes.
Even just name drop them or something towards the end. But, you know,
sometimes you need to sex it up. We already had some dead woman's tits, but like we got like the driver girl. I can't remember her name either.
The sister is there, though. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, doesn't he talk Monica to her in the bath or something? Doesn't he talk to the, because she was the driver, or does he just find her when she's dead?
She was one of Bianca's prostitutes, okay. And then she got taken.
Friends with the girl who get her heart blown out.
One of those was a sister, I was pretty sure. Like,
Jenny Sells, sister of Monica Sells, that's the only sister.
No.
Who is she?
Monica Sells is the wife of Victor Sells, the one that got Harry
involved. You jackass.
Jenny is the dead girl.
That's what I said. Oh, either the driver or the dead girl was the sister. And then you were just like, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, which one is it? So.
Okay. Driver's not the sister.
Who's Monica? Like, I better just throw this out the fucking thing and be like, that's it, guys. We're done. We'll come up with something in 2 weeks. Like, jeez.
Do it. But yeah, the Becketts, especially since they're like well-to-do and they're kind of a name in Chicago anyway. Yeah. Like, they could be that kind of overarching thing for the first three, maybe.
If the pacing is right, no. Like, let's not get too crazy bogged down in some of the details, right? Some of them are going to have to be left behind. But if the pacing is right, I think we can put in the conversation he has with the driver.
I can see the, emotional pain on Ellie.
I want them to be there, but I'm more agreeing with EG in the sense that it's like, you hear the Beckett's name because he's talking to the driver or whatever, if that comes up. You hear the Beckett's name when the police are, you know, arresting them at the end, but you're going to see the Beckett's fine. All of that can be there because they're kind of important for the finale, right? But we don't care who the Beckett's are until much later. That's the difference. That's the pacing that I'm talking about. Beckett's are here, and it's like that's not what happens in Stormfront. Like,
well, suggest is, especially if we're doing the first two books as one season, you can sort of see the Beckett's and at the lake house doing the ritual, but maybe they get away and they still take a shot at Marcone and have some sort of background influence during the full moon stuff, and then they get arrested. So that way you stretch it out enough that they're just, you can have them as background stuff again. Sure. It's more like a buildup of a quantity versus quality necessarily. They're there.
They could interact with Denton in some fashion.
Or whatever it is.
Arrest them and
if that's necessary.
It's just a matter of how much you want them to be involved versus that's how much they need to be involved.
I don't need them to be involved, but the director seems to. So I'm okay. Like, if she doesn't show up again until like Demeter, because like what I'm thinking of is like a lot of the show is going to be in a similar way to how he paces them anyway. The books, he's going to give you a thing. And then he's going to forget about it for like six books. And then he's going to come back and be like, oh, that's a thing.
My point of bringing it up at all is that we need to actually also intersperse when Harry's doing the investigative noir stuff. And like, he's still doing that. And so it's not just fight this and toe demon and Morgan and death threats, because he's also doing like, how did these people get killed? And that's where they come in Stormfront. It's like, just see them, hear their name, fine. But how he got to the point of figuring out what Victor Sells was doing at the lake house involved a dead driver. And whatever connection, that's also how Harry got to following Eddie, whatever the fuck, of Marcone's flunky that tracked him to the varsity. And then Marcone killed him and burned down the varsity and blamed Harry for it.
There's options with the Becketts that we don't have to play as hard and fast with that, because there's the three-eye drug. Maybe they could be funding that.
Right.
There's what Sells used to do for work. Maybe they could have been his bosses. You know, there are ways we can change it a little to make it more.
And honestly, the whole investigation that he does of Stormfront and figuring out what happened to Jenny Sells is not the greatest of his investigative work. And so it should probably just be rewritten entirely of how did he get all these pieces. It was the weakest part of the book, I think.
I feel like we got enough material to cut without inventing new shit, though. Like,
no, that's actually like combine, condense, whatever. He needs the information to get him from point A to point B, but yeah, that's it. But
suddenly them, you know, being the money backers behind all of this stuff and other things, that's not the same thing. That's inventing new details. That's what I'm saying. If we're going to combine and collapse, I'm a proponent, and I've said as much so far this episode directly anyway, but giving them new hooks into this and like, it takes away from who's actually behind it. They are backing the three-eye drug. They're providing the sexy times that fuel it, right?
They're also, you know, I'm fairly sure they're also financially backing it in the book.
Both, all of it. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, so some of that is there, but, you know, again, how into the weeds do we need to actually get with this when we've got...
It's much easier to show them being involved in the sex ritual than to describe them as being financial backers and never showing them. It's much more in your face, which is good.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, listen, name
we're going to hit the old people's sex market, so, you know, somebody will be
happy. The other part of this that I wanted to bring up is the fact that, like, we don't want to have like a microcosm of all of these, like that starts to paint them in my mind as more the masterminds behind the whole thing. This comment that, you know, the belts were made by Victor or whatever, but we know who did all that. We know somebody is behind all of those things. We want that to be a question that doesn't get answered until, like, you know, book 7 or later. You know, like,
are you implying that we show a hint of Cal for all of a second?
No, not at all. That's what I'm saying. And you don't want the Becketts to be confused with that. You don't want it to be like, oh, the Becketts were behind it all. And then just like, oh, cool, then whatever. Because if you don't know, then it's not going to matter. Cal and Kimori, fine. Obviously, we're going to have cloaked assholes in, you know, grave peril because they were there. They were handing out the things. They don't say anything because they don't say anything in the books, that sort of thing. But we don't want to accidentally be like, oh, well, the Becketts were, you know, really behind Victor. Victor was really behind the belts, because that's not what happened. And that's going to take away from the greater mystery that he doesn't even know he's on yet, which is the Black Council, which is Cowell, you know. So that's what I'm saying is, like, let's just make sure we're not inventing new details that puts them more in charge of shit that they weren't before, because that's going to muddy up later stuff. That's the risk. It's like, we got to get the little pacing right. Obviously, we survive every episode, but we also got to make sure that we haven't painted ourselves a bunch of problems when we get to book 10. Yeah. Or 9 in this case, you know, is another one, because he really starts to figure out the Black Council in White Knight. Right. When Cal basically is like, haha, I am doing shit. And it's like, haven't I kicked your ass before? Pretty sure I've kicked your ass before, you know? So, I mean, deadbeat, he almost died. But, you know, there was fighting involved. I flipped a car on him. How does that not enough? Like, so, but yeah. That was my caution. Sorry that derailed the whole thought train.
No, but, because, you know, you don't want to get painted into a corner when dealing with all of these things, and you don't want to do too much of a bait and switch accidentally with setting up someone as being more important than they are.
Sure. Right.
Beckett is important, but she's not Cal. We need to make sure that she doesn't seem like Cal.
Right. Yeah. And like, it's going to get to the point, especially if you've got, you know, let's focus on Marcone and what he's doing. Let's focus on Lara and what she's doing. You do have these players, you know, that are moving these chess pieces, but let's make sure that they're distinct and they've got their own, you know, spheres, and that makes a bit more sense. And I mean, that's the Bible right there, you know?
Like, I mean, I did like the idea of, if you're stretching out the Becketts involvement throughout the whole season and not just for Stormfront, and then you use that as more of a foil for Marcone, but you run the risk of making them seem larger antagonists than they are.
Right. And they're in jail for a while, you know? Yeah. So like, that's a realism that should be like, I mean, sure, they're rich, and that's part of the fantasy aspect, is that rich people go to jail. But sorry, social commentary, zing. But yeah, like, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, unless I'm mistaken, you just straight up don't hear about them until much later, right?
Not until the Cauldron of the Black Teapot.
Right. Which is White Knight. So, you know. And so, like, you know, I'd be fine if we needed to sneak something in there at some point to just be like, you know, another little bit of tidbit, right? Because again, the pacing of like shows in books are different, obviously. And that's why we've got all of these episodes we're going to do instead, you know, and whatever. So it's like, if we've got, if it's keepy uppy, right? If we got to drop her name in like, you know, another book story somewhere to keep her active, we could do that. Otherwise, like, ideally, like, you know, she's just a detail until she crops up again, you know, and that's where I was like, I'm pumping the brakes on this because it sounds like it's going to be something else if I don't.
Well, like, how they impact Marcone's backstory, I think, is more important because Harry's always going to hate him, but we, the audience, need a more understanding of Marcone in its entirety.
It's visual. Right. We're in a TV show. She doesn't have to do anything, but she can be there. And then you could be like Leonardo DiCaprio and you could be like, wait a minute, isn't that the bitch that got arrested in episode one? And then like two episodes later, you're like, it is the bitch that got arrested in episode one.
What if just like.
It's actually her character name. We don't even call her Ellen.
Right.
Like after.
Bitch Beckett. So
after the Bianca's mansion's all burnt down and Marcone takes over the prostitution in Chicago. At some point, Harry has to meet with Marcone for whatever reason. There are plenty of those moments. And you just see her walking out of a meeting in the background from Marcone as Harry goes in and can be like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Harry doesn't even know. That's the best part. Like, it could be one of those things where you see her face for 1 to 3 seconds. But she's like when he's trying to get Harry to sign the contract or whatever, you know, she's the one managing the paperwork. Easy. Guess what? She's his secretary, right? That's literally who you would expect to be there. Really? You know,
the contract in Full Moon.
It's an Easter egg. So, like, I don't know. You were the one that wanted to see more of the Becketts. I'm just saying this is how we could make it happen.
I more want the foil for Marcone of like his background and why he's driven. But she doesn't need to
feel like the Wraiths are.
If you do too much with her, like what you said a few minutes ago, then you ruin White Knight.
I don't know if you ruined it, but you ruined that part of it.
The reveal of who she is as Demeter and that purpose, that was important. Don't ruin that.
Okay, sure.
So it's like as much as...
Okay.
The Becketts need to be involved with Victor Sells, but they can be barely anything. It's more important about Marcone's backstory and Amanda Beckett. But that can all just be like as to why he... Is he a bad guy? Is he not a bad guy with Denton in Full Moon?
Well, and I think really Marcone just has multiple foils, right? It starts out as Bianca and then Bianca kind of leaves him in the dust in a lot of ways, but in other ways, still appropriate. Actually, he's just a lot slower than she was about it. You know, the thing with Denton, it's like, you know, I guess we got to nail the fact that we know he's a gangster, right? Obviously. And I think the car scene is a lot of that. And that's a thing that's going to be, that's going to be a big challenge because it's like, how do you demonstrate that? You know, like, I guess you've got to splice in a scene from Harry's perspective and what Harry sees, you know, and that sort of thing. But,
The Soul Gazer mechanic is going to be a style that we're going to have to either commit to. It's like, since it's from his perspective, he's not going to see all the same things, but like, there's a vast difference between the feeling he gets from Marcone versus the literal scene of Molly in the mirrors. So it's either a matter of we just visually represent them as distinct things in a different style or whatever, or it's just Harry viewing it and he gets, you know, like one of them will be more abstract versus more literal.
I was thinking like this one could almost be abstract in the sense that like this is very 90s and I recognize that it's probably a bad idea. But since we're in the writer's room, all ideas go on the table first. But having them, you know, eye contact and you've got the ultra close up of them looking at each other and then having Marcone like morph into a tiger and then Harry snaps out of it and he's like, oh, shit. You know, and Harry realizes what's happened and maybe you do too. But, you know, like, because a lot of it's descriptive, right? He talks about how he's got, you know, he's got animal eyes and all of this other stuff, and that it's more like he's talking to a tiger and whatever. Am I making some of this up? You're looking confused.
Sound effects might be a little better for that, only because if you show him morphing in a show about supernatural creatures, you might have people thinking he's a were-tiger.
Right. That's a very good point. Let's commission Hans Zimmer to do the music.
Well, just having like a growl or something, you know. Let's see.
I like the idea of just being actually sucked in and do a scene of the soul gaze, because they're like all very distinct and cool and say a lot about the characters that are soul gaze, and he's never soul gaze as willy-nilly.
We could have it like the visions in That's So Raven, where she gets that face and then it just like spirals out, and then all of a sudden you're in the vision. And that'll just be what it is for Harry.
I don't know what that means.
I know, but now you have something to look up later. I mean, the soul gazes can be their own, like, little, like, obviously something like Molly's is going to be important that he explores it for a second there. So having a representation of he's literally getting pulled into this, and then you establish, like, it's literally just a second that's happened in the real world, so you snap back to it type deal.
Like, a focus on, this the first soul gaze is Marcone, right? Marcone is wearing an expensive Rolex. That could be, like, somehow, like, you can... A focus on the watches, the soul gaze
something inception, something,
and like it's like one tick a second, and then you come out again, and then it has moved one tick.
Sure,
like it's been a second.
That would be a way to do it.
Sure, yeah.
And I should make TV shows. That's a good idea.
There we go. That's it. That's season one. That's a wrap, guys.
We did it.
It's a wrap. That was my contribution. Writer's credit. Put me on the credits. Everything.
How's your task bar looking? It's like six things still.
Yeah, where's my tool?
He's right there.
No, I'm I'm a writer now. The code, that's Justin.
No, I think your credit just got lost in the mail somewhere. I don't think it's been recognized by SAG-AFTRA.
I like how I just say this could potentially be a thing I could look into.
Should know better. Every time I've heard anyone say something like that, they get tasked with like, now you have to go do the research thing.
Do that. Anyway, we're talking about Dresden, right?
Not anymore. We're not. Yeah. We've
exceeded our time. We spent half the episode talking about the Becketts and how they can or cannot be in this.
It was like 10 minutes. Come on now. So,
you know. Well, I mean, to be fair, between that and the puppets, that ate up a good chunk of time.
That was more, yes.
I think the soul gazes should all be puppets.
That's how you get the puppets in. Yeah, that would be pretty funny.
Puppet Molly and all the mirrors.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm off this train still.
If it's like Team America, it's like, okay, I can't really.
I think this will be... It'll be a good meme, and we'd have to work it into the show, but it'd be like a good palate cleanser when we're being too serious and we need to break it up for a minute, because that's what I feel like happened today. But, you know, other than that, like, no, I'm off the puppet train. So,
coward.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Infinite money. I will do all the things.
Andreas, plug our stuff. You know how to do that still, right?
Yeah, so this has been a production of the Broken Jars Podcast Network. And we have things you can like give us money on, like Patreon, right? Like you can come on our Discord. We have gifts. We do gifts wars. We're people. We need money. Service costs money. YouTube, subscribe.
If you like what we're doing with the Disney TV show that we don't own, give us infinite money and we can make this happen.
Yes. Come on. Submit your ideas. We will present those ideas as our own if we like them. And if we don't, we will simply ridicule you by screen name.
The most important thing is if you give us enough money, they will fly me to the US and we'll do a live show together.
If we get enough money, we may have to rethink about our investments here.
Donate to the Costco Pizza Fund. So
because it would be cheaper to send you a Costco pizza than to bring you here.
This is my solemn promise. We will live stream from a Costco, me eating a Costco pizza for the first time. Live on this channel.
And Andreas' solemn promise is that he's going to be the one to set that up, because I sure as shit am not.
Right.
I'll fly.
He has given himself another task.
And we'll do it. Like, it's fine. I got my phone somewhere. here.
Somewhere.
Here, I can stream from this.
All right, okay. Next week, we're finally going to talk about Aeronauts Windless because
maybe
unforeseen circumstances have been taken care of.
I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure I don't have anything going on.
Yeah,
I actually thought you were about to say I'm sorry.
Them and not
I'm sorry, I'm not coming again.
Yeah, that's what I thought he was going to say.
All right. So, yeah, Aeronauts Windless next week, and we can finally explore all cats again.
Part one of 57?
Probably.
So is this. What's the difference?